The Bob Murphy Show, episode 38.
There's a tidal wave coming. What you gonna do?
Get ready for another episode of The Bob Murphy Show, the podcast promoting free markets, free minds, and grateful souls. It's your source for commentary and interviews conducted by a Christian and economist. Now here's your host, Bob Murphy.
Hey everybody, it's Bob Murphy here. Here is another solo episode, and what I'm doing here is, it's a little bit of a double dip, I'm not gonna lie to you, but it's partly because I have so many interviews in the can here, I wanna get this stuff out to you guys. So what I'm doing is replaying a recent Contra Krugman episode that I handled in a solo fashion because Tom was busy with something. And so this particular Contra Krugman episode is basically how I would have handled it had I been dealing with Krugman's column here on the Bob Murphy Show in a solo episode. So that's why I figure it's not that I'm cheating you guys, it's that I was cheating Tom and the Contra Krugman listeners, okay? So just keep that in mind. You're my first priority. They're like somewhere around 8 or 9. So what the topic, well, I introduced it on the show. And by the way, I should mention, if somehow you listen to this, the Bob Murphy Show, and you're not listening to Contra Krugman, I would highly recommend it. Tom and I, we engage in banter. That's one of the things that you lack when you just listen to me explain things. Of course, we get into much deeper stuff here on the Bob Murphy Show, but it's fun. It's fun with Tom. He's a good guy. So without further ado, here is my discussion of Krugman's column, when Tom basically said, Bob, it's up to you. I was his only hope. Hope you like it. Hey, everybody, it's Tom and Bob here. Oh, wait, that's not Tom and Bob. It's just me. It's Bob. Tom is doing something. He announced the public reason, so I think it's fine for me to say. It was his daughter's graduation, and we got a lot of stuff going on. I'm traveling, he's traveling, we're all traveling, and just didn't work out for us to record. And so that's what I'm doing. May I say, just incidentally, it's kind of funny when I read people on the internet who just hate Tom with a burning passion. I don't mean they think he's a wise guy. I mean, so do I. I'm saying the people that truly view him as an enemy to be defeated. And there are people who really think like that about him. If you knew him, he like runs around frazzled all the time because of his daughters and how he can't let them down. That doesn't mean all his ideas are right. I'm just saying those of you who think he's sitting around plotting to take away your freedoms or something, I'm not mad at you. It's just funny how wrong you are. Okay, I'll move on. So we're talking about Krugman. Now, in contrast, the lovable, fuzzy Tom. By the way, you know what? Let me do the ad before I forget. Dun, 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 dun. Hey, folks, let's take a break from Bob starting the show to talk about Liberty Classroom. It's phenomenal, okay? You guys know I'm pretty modest. What I just mean is there's stuff in there that people that you hear online or you see us make a funny Facebook poster. I mean, we actually are super geeks. And so it's in Liberty Classroom where we let that side shine, okay? So check it out. Go to libertyclassroom.com. We'll put a link at the show notes page as well. All right, and I won't do a commercial for the rest of the show. So Krugman here, he's talking. This is the column, by the way, May 29th, 2019. It's called Trump Tantrums the Dems Out of a Trap. Try to say that three times fast. So in this column, and I promise, folks, it's not that I was like, oh, gee, I got to host a show by myself. I need to come up with some kind of shtick or something. I got to have some bombshell or I know I'll accuse Krugman of being a horrible guy. And like this column really shows his value system is bankrupt because normally we just focus on, you know, his fallacious reasoning. But in this one, I really think Krugman unwittingly revealed something about his character. And I feel compelled to share it with all of you since it's like half of his column. All right. So the summary of the column is, let me just read the first line. I got to say, it was very clever of Nancy Pelosi to steal Donald Trump's strawberries, pushing him over the edge into self-evident lunacy. All right. So that's a reference to that movie. Was it like Mutiny on the Cane or Mutiny on the USS Cane? Something like that. Where I forget the guy's name, but the captain kind of goes, he go loco. And at some point, he's like accusing somebody on the crew of stealing the strawberries out of the mess kitchen or something like that. So anyway, and that's like when everyone starts really realizing, uh-oh, this guy's a little... So anyway, Krugman's saying, you know, the more Trump's in office here, the more we realize this guy's just plain nuts. And so Krugman goes on, he's talking about Trump apparently stormed out of a meeting on infrastructure. Now, just think about that for a second. Except I'm sure you guys have seen like on NPR and places, they treated it as such. Like it, Trump storms out of meeting with Pelosi, furious over infrastructure. And I mean, what could, let me put it this way, what could Trump have done so that they would not in good conscience be able to write that? Would he have had to tippy-toe out? Would he have had to do a moonwalk? And then they'd say, I mean, say what you will about that. And it was a horrible and racist, but I mean, we really can't call that storming out, right? I mean, that would just be a lie. So anyway, I'm not saying it is a lie. Maybe he did storm out, but I'm just saying there's no way we could possibly know that. We derive no information if we're updating in a Bayesian fashion from reading this sentence in Krugman's column. Okay. But here's the part. Krugman says, and Democrats should be grateful. And so this is half of his column and the thing that just really provoked me into thinking this is unbelievable, this guy's character. Okay. So why should you, so hang on a second. Trump storms out of a meeting on infrastructure. So there's not going to be any infrastructure deal. And Krugman's saying Democrats should be grateful. So presumably, since Democrats are good and they're going to just do what's in the interest of the country, I mean, they might make a mistake, but they're trying to help as opposed to the Republicans who hate poor people and just want to take away everyone's health care in order to give corporate tax cuts, right? So the Democrats are the good people. Krugman is saying Democrats should be grateful that Trump stormed out of a meeting on infrastructure because they were trying to cook up a deal. Let's put aside our petty differences and get a, you know, push through infrastructure spending. So surely the bulk of Krugman's article will be devoted to showing why an infrastructure bill right now actually is a bad idea. Like maybe you'd say, I mean, the economy's at full employment, so maybe even Krugman's going to admit, you know, there's no stimulus reason for infrastructure spending. So maybe, you know, instead of infrastructure, it should be on climate change or veterans' health or malaria nets for Africa. I mean, it could be all kinds of stuff, right? That's what you're getting ready for Krugman to say. Oh, no, actually, totally the opposite. Krugman spends the bulk of his column explaining why an infrastructure bill would be good. So then how could it possibly be that Democrats should be glad that Trump walked out? Well, I'll give you a hint. It's because he's saying this denies a political win to Trump. So I'll read selectively from Krugman's column here to not quote too much, but he goes on to say, you see, a major infrastructure push is a very good idea, one that Democrats would find it hard to oppose in good conscience. Yet it would also be politically good for Trump, helping the economy, giving the public a sense of progress, and also making him seem like a normal president, or more like a normal president. And Democrats would have had a hard time avoiding making him this gift. All right, and then he, I'm just going to read now, stuff interspersed the column. He says, luckily, Trump has solved their problem. Then he goes on to the, you know, substantive things for why infrastructure spending is necessary right now and a good idea. And then Krugman here, here's how he ends. Let's not try to pretend there was any clever political strategy in Trump's walkout. It was just his immaturity and insecurity, but even more obvious than usual. And the attempt to portray Pelosi as out of control is so ludicrous that only totally deluded people, in other words, around a third of the country, could possibly believe it. So here's a crucial line, folks. So if I were Pelosi and Schumer, I would be quietly expressing thanks to Trump for throwing a tantrum in extricating them from a potential political trap. All right, now I'm just going to spend a moment on this. Even for me, that sort of struck me as odd the first time I read it. But even now, just preparing for this recording, it really sunk into me. Just what a creepy thing that is for Krugman to say, or a creepy line of attack or scaffolding for his article. Because again, it's that... what I just read to you, and then the rest. So it's probably like one third is what I read to you, but you know, based on that. And then the other two thirds is like him explaining why an infrastructure bill is a good idea from his Keynesian perspective. But before, you know, we'll tackle that in a minute, but I really just want to wait. Hang on. Let's not jump right into the economics. Let's stop here and consider the political and moral system here, or value judgments being rendered. That Krugman is glad something he thought would be good for the country economically didn't pass because that would have given Trump a boost politically. I mean, he wasn't being coy about it. That's what he said. Now, I guess you could say, no, Bob, technically he said, if I were Pelosi and Schumer, but also earlier he says, and Democrats should be grateful. Okay, so it's not just Pelosi and Schumer. It's all Democrats. Now, I don't know if he means all Democratic politicians or all people in the country who consider themselves Democrats, including, I believe, Paul Krugman. Okay, so just using set theory, I think actually Krugman may be, in fact, including himself in these value judgments. But at the very least, he's saying all Democrats should be grateful. So to him, you know, he's not saying, if I were Pelosi and Schumer, who, by the way, are backstabbing monsters and don't represent the rest of the No, that's clearly not who he's saying. He's identifying with them. They're his tribe. They're his team. And Krugman is saying they should be glad this happened. Phew, we dodged a bullet there. Am I right, folks? That's what Krugman's saying here. And that's really sick that he's saying something would be good for the whole country. And yet, no, because we don't want to give Trump a political victory here. To see how sick it is, imagine, I'm guessing most of you are libertarian. Imagine if you found yourself writing something on Facebook along the lines of, well, yeah, I'm glad that one politician walked out of the hearing and sabotaged this bill. I mean, yeah, it was going to legalize marijuana. And so, you know, thousands of people would stop being thrown in cages. And that would have been cool. But, you know, I really hate this one politician. So I'm glad that he walked out of this, even though it would have helped him politically. Can you imagine writing that? Or, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm glad that Trump pulled all the troops out of Afghanistan and Iraq, but I think that's good that we won't have people dying as much and we won't cause as many casualties among foreigners. But I mean, it does help that one politician. So I don't know. That's kind of, and if you were talking like that, then something's wrong with you. All right. So this is really shocking to me that Krugman's just so casually admits this stuff. And I think somebody would say something like someone wanted to defend him would be like, Bob, he's just trying to like play the game and be cool and like contribute both in terms of the political analysis and the dry economics. So he's trying to get a little foot in both camp. He wants to be like the Bret Stephens and those kind of guys who get to just shoot their mouth off on the political scene, even though they're not all that intelligent, Krugman thinks. And so why can't he do that too? He likes to dabble like Murray Rothbard did movie reviews. Why can't Krugman play, you know, political analyst? So that's what he's doing. Okay, that's fine. But again, Krugman is saying his team, the one he publicly roots for, should be glad that the country is going to not get something that would have helped it. And so it'd be like if you were rooting for, you know, it's like some people might be driven to defending cheating if they like Tom Brady. Notice, I'm not saying he's a cheater. I'm being neutral. I'm above the fray. All I'm saying is there's a concern that some people are saying, like, yeah, so what if you did do that? I don't agree. See what I mean? Like, hey, he's just playing within the rules. They got penalized. You got to do what you got to do. So, I mean, imagine if you're rooting for like a crime family, you know, like the Gotti's are really your family. And so like every time they shoot somebody, you're like, hey, do what they had to do. Good stuff. I would do that too if I were them. No, I'm not a kid. I'm just saying if I were John Gotti, this is what I would. See, at some point, wouldn't you have to say, yeah, you really shouldn't be analyzing them in order to entertain people. Like that's not. You know, those are bad people. So likewise here, yeah, part of the reason the parties get away with what they do is because their cheerleaders are fine with anything. Now, obviously, this isn't a Democrat-only thing. Republicans certainly have no problem with war in particular, but still. All right, let's turn to the economics. Krugman says, first of all, the state of our roads, rail lines, water systems, and so on speaks for itself. He's making the point that we've been underinvesting in public infrastructure for years, and so that's why an infrastructure bill right now would be a good thing to help the country. I think I mentioned this the last episode, but let me repeat it. Isn't it amazing that the things on which the government spends money, the things that everybody considers to be clearly items in the custody and protection and care of the federal government, you know, things like interstate highways and certain types of, see, even here, this is, I'm sorry, I'm bouncing all over, but even here, Krugman's arguments are so slippery that, you know, I think a lot of the infrastructure you see, it's actually not the responsibility of the federal government. And so if it's true, especially if you think it through, if it's true that, oh, we've been underspending politically and those Republican morons always cut taxes. Okay. So even if that's true, then that means the state governments should now have more, you know, after federal tax income, a bigger tax base, so they could boost their state budgets, right? So think, just again, let me repeat that. If it's something where it's not really, or it's not solely the responsibility of the federal government, then even if Krugman's story of, you know, his version of history were true, and over the years, anytime a Republican comes in, they gut infrastructure spending and they give huge tax cuts, then that means the state governments, all they have to do is tax from their people and spend what they want. And the beauty of that is you can tailor the taxing and spending to the particular state. So it's a lot more nuanced and responsive to what the citizens need than if it had to be run through Washington, right? In general, individuals who live in states don't benefit from a federal program, you know, right? That the only reason somebody might benefit from it going through Washington is if you happen to live in a state that receives more per capita in highway funding and bridge packages or whatever, then your citizens pay per capita in taxes, you know, the proportion of which ends up going towards the highway program, right? So it's certainly not the case that every American benefits from that. In fact, on net, we lose because, again, there's less chance that the spending is going to be allocated in a way that's responsive to the demographics and driving habits and whatever of the people by state. It'd be much better to have a state-based decision. So in any event, isn't that funny, though, that all these things that are allegedly in dire need of more investment, they're always in the public sector. Like, you very rarely go into a Walmart and it's like, oh yeah, you know, aisles 1 through 5 are pretty good, but man, once you get into aisles 6, 7, 8, 9, like there's holes, the tiles are all broken. You got to just be careful when you move the cart around those aisles. You know, there's a program that they've got in place to fix them, but you know, maybe 18 months down the road, they'll have fixed that so I can safely navigate those aisles. No, that never happens inside a store. And it's because that would be stupid. They would fix it right away because there's competition. Some other store would take better care of it. So this isn't a coincidence, right? The reason the roads are crappy is because the government's in charge of them. The reason the schools are crappy is because the government's in charge of them. The reason the water in Flint, Michigan, what happened? They had to import bottled water because, you know, they didn't trust the government water. Nobody ever, you know, worries about, oh my gosh, but what if all those bottles of water from Desano, what if they were systematically poisonous for kids? Oh, that's such a silly hypothesis. It's not even worth exploring. I mean, first of all, they wouldn't let that happen. And if they did, they would quickly reverse it. You know, they would solve the problem by next Thursday. And they'd yank all the bottles that hadn't been sold yet to make sure nobody else got sick. And then they would fix it. And if they didn't, they'd go out of business and people would buy from some other company. Right? This is not hard. This is obvious. So again, you can't say, oh, you need the government to distribute certain things like water because it doesn't. No, here's a case where the government failed. And what did people turn to? They turned to the market. Yeah, get in bottled water here from a name brand company, maybe. I mean, that's how it works. If you would let those roads and bridges get turned over to the private sector, then all of a sudden you wouldn't have potholes all over the place. And there wouldn't be traffic jams anymore, at least not systematically. A traffic jam occurs when the price to use the road is set so low that the quantity demanded exceeds the quantity supplied. It's a shortage. So there you go. They should raise the tolls or fees. Private owners would do that during rush hour. That would thin out, you know, the drivers who had some discretion in when they could leave the office or, you know, if they're going to jump in the car to just go to the store. If it costs more to use the road during those hours, like between 4 and 7 p.m. and in the mornings, you know, between 6 and 9:30 a.m., something like that. If it costs more to use the roads then, people who had some discretion would just go outside those hours. And even for people who had to, you know, go to work or whatever, they would be more likely to take things, you know, take like the city bus if that was an option or some other kind of transportation to carpool at the very least. You know, they hook you up with Jim and Jack. All the people in this company are named with something that starts with a J. And Jehoshaphat, he has the van. Jehoshaphat rolls up and the deal is that he picks him up in the morning because they all live near each other. He drives in and they pay for his gas. And they do that so that way not all four of them have to pay the pretty hefty fee to use the road in the morning. Now, oh, that sounds horrible, except it would be cheaper, all things considered. So the fee might even be zero on the off hours, right? So maybe it's rush hour traffic that pays for the bridge and the roads outright, could be. So the other people can't complain because they get to use the road for free. and the total amount you paid would be lower than what you pay in taxes right now or other fees, you know, per year or something. All right. So yes, you might be pay more on a day when there's peak pricing, but on average, you would pay less than you pay now because private companies are way more efficient. They could build a given road for the same, for less money, or for the same money, they could build a much better road. All right. So Krugman then also says, infrastructure spending is especially desirable in a depressed economy. Wait a minute, but we don't have a depressed economy because it puts idle resources to work in a way that promotes long-run growth. That's what he says. But we don't have a depressed, so why was this? Oh, Krugman anticipates the objection. He says, but you may argue the U.S. economy isn't depressed right now. Indeed, it isn't, but it's more fragile than many realize. When the next recession comes, and there's always a next recession, the conventional response, cutting interest rates, will almost surely be inadequate, blah, blah, blah. And so when a recession does strike, it will be too late to get a major infrastructure program going. Better to have it already underway. Okay, so there, I mean, if there's a depressed economy, the answer is infrastructure spending. If we have the lowest unemployment rate since like 1962 or something like that, which is true right now, the answer is more infrastructure spending because the unemployment rate might be higher down the road. So I suppose we need to wait and see when unemployment is really low and the interest rate is at least 5.5% so that there's room to cut interest rates 5 percentage points like Krugman says is necessary. And maybe that in that case, oh, and there's got to be a Republican in office. No, no, there could be a Democrat in office. And I want to see in that situation if Krugman says they shouldn't spend more on infrastructure because then we've taken away, you know, the economic rationale. But maybe that'll never happen. In any event, I think it's pretty clear here that Krugman just always likes to spend on infrastructure. And I think the broader point too, again, just to return to the beginning, is that Krugman's admitting this would be good for the economy, doesn't want the Democrats to do it. It's lucky that Trump stormed out of that meeting. Okay, the last point I'll make here is Krugman says that investment demand remains weak, leading to low government borrowing costs. Investors are effectively begging the government to take some of their money and do something useful with it. Okay, so here, this is going to be a slightly esoteric point. This came up a lot, maybe in 2011, 2012, maybe around then, where they were calling for, they were saying there was a safe asset shortage. And so that was partly the justification or the rationale for big government deficits. So beyond the Fed pushing interest rates down to zero, and that wasn't enough. And so why do you need the federal budget to run in deficit? And one of the ways Krugman and DeLong were motivating that was to say that people were scared. They were trying to deleverage. And so people in the private sector wanted to invest in very safe assets, namely like Japanese and U.S. treasury bonds. Like that's where they wanted to earn, you know, German bonds too. That's where they wanted to go. They didn't trust anything in the private sector because they just got burned in the housing bubble. They didn't see that coming. That terrified them. There was, you know, runs on money market mutual funds and such, breaking the buck. Uh-oh, we don't like this. The shadow banking system was really fragile. So the one safe place to run is like the U.S. Treasury and Japanese government. And so that's why, hey, if they want safe assets, let's give them more safe assets. So how does the government give more bonds on net? By running a big deficit. That's the only way to do it. So that was something they were talking about. And that's what Krugman is talking about here. So he wants the government to go ahead and run up the deficit to get more. By the way, you remember when Trump first came in, Krugman wrote a column called Deficits Matter Again. But I guess he had an asterisk and then said, unless it's for infrastructure. Actually, for all I know, maybe he did. So someone call it my snark. You go look at that. But in any event, here he's making the same argument. This is not correct. So the sort of esoteric point is, like, in other words, why is it considered very safe to invest with the U.S. Treasury? It's not because they have a really good portfolio. And everybody says, oh, that's a good mix of, you know, cash, little cash, cash equivalents, cheesy puffs. There's some Veggie Tales where they diversify their funds and put some in cheesy puffs or something like that. Anyway, it's good stuff. And so the claim is that they're going to invest in these safe assets. So how is it going to be safe? Because the government taxes. That's the real reason. The U.S. government, as long as it doesn't, I mean, put aside even the Fed comes into play too. All right. So there's two prongs involved. Just even if you're on the gold standard, the U.S. government would still probably have the lowest interest rates of any American institution because they can tax, right? So they can go get revenue if they need it. And then now with the Fed involved, presumably who's waiting in the wings to monetize things, especially if Stephanie Carlton gets her way, then, you know, it's real simple. Of course the government doesn't need to default. They can just print money. All right. So either of those effectively redistributes resources, though, from the average dollar holder or the average taxpayer. All right. So let's just assume we're only talking about the U.S. and not borrowing from abroad, to keep it simple. So if the government involved is one world government, and where the question is, if it runs a budget deficit, can that enhance the economic security of the average person? The answer is no, clearly not. You know, the government's not making things more stable financially, right? So if there's going to be an economic crisis, it's not alleviated just because the government ran a bigger deficit. I would argue, if anything, it's worse the other way around. Whatever the crisis may have been, or the crisis profile, it's going to be worse if the government siphons off another $500 billion in real resources from the private sector. So in any event, can that make the average citizen safer? No, it can only redistribute the risk. And so, yes, people by buying into the treasury market, but if you think there is a legitimate role for that, where selecting it, like the people who really want safety are able to buy it through the treasury market, and then the rest of the country sort of gives it to them, and maybe there's some kind of arbitrage involved where the average person is better off because the people who desire safety bought it at a price below what they would have been willing to pay, and the people providing the security, as their role as passive taxpayers who don't load up on treasury debt, you know, they pay for it, they sell it in the form of higher taxes to fund, you know, the interest payments on the debt that's accruing just to the treasury holders. Okay, so you could write up some scenario where, yeah, that's a win-win, but only if you assume there's not a market, a voluntary market, that would have provided something comparable. And I think there would be. Like, you can imagine insurance contracts that, you know, pay off under certain well-defined scenarios, and, you know, it would be effectively the same thing. So maybe I'll flesh it out in an article somewhere, but I just throw that out there. Even if you thought there was some weird configuration where a certain segment of the population really wanted to be reassured that they were going to, you know, have an adequate baseline measure of consumption down the road, or I guess you could say wealth in real terms, then the market would figure out a way that the rest of the community would sell it to them at an appropriate price. And so that's the way you would transform, you know, the holding of risk. And if you think the government could happen to get that right, I mean, think of how crude that is, that the, you know, the government treasury bond market is the only way you're going to handle all that. Whereas, you know, in reality, people are worried about all kinds of different things, like, you know, wheat farmers are really worried about wheat, and that's why there's futures and forward markets in wheat. Okay, so this idea that you're going to have to go through the federal government of your country in order to get safety, or maybe even not your country, if you're, you know, somebody who lives in South America and you're buying treasuries and Japanese bonds, the idea that that's as good as it gets. No, that's crazy. And again, don't be fooled. When you look at private organizations and like their chance of default on the bonds they issue, that's a real price that reflects something. And again, you're not getting something for nothing by going through the government. It's that the taxpayers can't protect themselves. And so it's like a negative externality, if that's the way you want to think about it. If the government runs a bigger deficit solely to placate, or largely to placate, citizens who want to have less risk financially, then that only comes by foisting more risk than they wanted on the rest of the population. So I doubt that's efficient. Why don't we end there, folks? This has been Bob Murphy speaking on behalf of Tom Woods and Bob Murphy. You've been listening to Contra Krugman. Join us next time.
You've just experienced another episode of The Bob Murphy Show, the podcast promoting free markets, free minds, and grateful souls. For more information and to subscribe to this podcast, visit bobmurphyshow.com.